Friday, March 16th, 2018. Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant, independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. It is quite alarming how much of verifiable U.S. history is either deemed conspiracy theory or outright ignored as false, when all it takes is the smallest amount of research. This is social programming, in effect. So what do we know? We know that the U.S. has a long and sordid history of colonialism. The U.S. has meddled in hundreds of elections, overthrown governments, and destabilized those it wishes to control. This is not disputed. It's simply obfuscated, as it's very easy to simply do the research and see the history for yourself. We know that the U.S. government has carried out false flags, many to which it has admitted, such as the Gulf of Tonkin. But the fact that many would scoff at that statement shows just how well they have been conditioned to ignore what is easily verified. We know that the U.S. has carried out genocide and committed massive war crimes. Even today is the anniversary of one of the most heinous and grisly acts against civilians during wartime, wherein the U.S. slaughtered, raped, and brutally tortured as many as 500 unarmed men, women, children, and the elderly, nearly the entire population of the South Vietnamese hamlet of My Lai. And again, this is not disputed, only conditioned from the memory of the masses, or they are at least conditioned to assume such an act is just outside the realm of possibility for their benevolent government. So they never do their due diligence and reflexively call you fake news for simply discussing a documented event. This is why the U.S., or rather those who have stolen it from us, carry on with an air of moral superiority. Because the people allow it. They allow it by not speaking out. They allow it by blindly supporting an authoritarian regime dressed up as a democracy. Most importantly, they allow it by doing nothing. Just as Bertrand Russell said, the whole problem with the world is that fools and fanatics are always so certain of themselves, and wise people so full of doubts. It's time we stop allowing the fools and fanatics to dictate our future. It is time we each do our part. And the first thing we can do is simply help awaken those close to you to the stark reality that is just under the surface. For the first article of the day, coming out of antiwar.com, U.S. revives debunked conspiracy theories about Russia hacking the electrical grid. While they always stop short of official allegations in the past, U.S. officials have, since 2016, repeatedly insinuated that Russia had been trying to hack the U.S. electrical grid. Thursday, the Trump administration directly made those allegations for the first time. This new report appears to be timed to come out with the new U.S. sanctions against Russia, which cited, quote, malicious cyber attacks as one of their justifications. The allegations, however, stem from accusations which have been out since the Obama administration era and have long been discredited. The report itself is largely just a white paper on how hacking in general works, with scant mention of what Russia is even alleged to have done. The report dates the incidents to since 2016, however, and the description clearly mirrors the much-vaunted Burlington Electric hack in Vermont in 2016. The problem is that this Burlington story was preposterously overblown. Far from an attack on the U.S. electrical grid, it represented a single computer that happened to be owned by a single electrical company, but which wasn't attached to the grid system in the first place, getting infected with malware. The type of malware this single laptop was infected with was similar to types that were Russian-made. This led to the conclusion that this was a Russian plot, despite similar malware being common worldwide. This was then spun into a Russian attack on the electrical grid, despite it having nothing to do with the grid, no definitive link to Russia, and only indirect links to anything electrical. Still, it was a popular story for the Washington Post in 2016, and even though it was complete nonsense, the Trump administration seems comfortable trotting it back out in 2018, assuming that media outlets will again report it unquestioningly. So far, that appears to be the case with many mainstream outlets. And it's hard not to see the clear correlation behind the Russian spy story and using these indirect links to essentially point the finger at Russia. It's exactly what we saw in this case, where clearly there is no proof of anything. There's no evidence that this was Russia behind this. It's rather an indirect connection to something slightly Russian, so they carry out aggressive military actions based on the hypothetical idea. And the point is that they're willing to do that regardless. They don't care about the evidence. It's about political moves, like I said last show. And clearly they're using this to move forward because they think it's something that can give them one more step in the direction of framing Russia as the evil bad guy. And regardless whether Russia is the evil bad guy, that's beside the point. What we're talking about here is the fact that there is no evidence to back up what they're trying to say here. And whether or not the people allow this to go forward is what's going to make the difference. The people need to stand up and speak out about the fact that we have very clear documented proof that there is no connection in regard to the electrical hacking of the electrical grid in regard to Russia. Yet we're moving forward with actions and sanctions and taking steps. That cannot happen. Like we said in the beginning, this is up to us as the people to speak out and stop these things from moving forward. It's our choice. The people have power when they stand together and raise their voice. The problem is there's been so much conditioning and programming and propaganda that the people don't know what's up and what's down. That's what we have to begin to overcome. These stories are only designed to keep us focused in one direction. We must begin to see that. Moving on to the next story coming out of activistpost.com, department with only 8 cops secretly acquired an arsenal of 19 military vehicles using 1033 program. An 11-member police force, 8 full-time and 3 part-time, for a Delaware town with 400 residents, has availed itself of more than $3 million in 1033 gear over the last 5 years. This first came to light late last year when documents obtained by Muckrock prompted town officials to wonder why they hadn't been notified of the department's stockpile. As the Beacon reports, among hundreds of line items turned over between March 2013 and December 2017, the police acquired a total of 12 ATVs, 51 jackets or parkas, and 13 space heaters and 19 trucks of all kinds. Included in this cache of military vehicles to police a town of 400 citizens is an armored Humvee and another mine-resistant armored vehicle. There are more vehicles than the police officers can drive, and the department apparently sees nothing wrong with this, nor do they want you to know about it. What's more, they're apparently profiting from the sale of some of the equipment and refusing to report how much they are making, who they're selling it to, or where the money is going. This is all being paid for by the American tax dollars, yet they are turning around and selling them for profit. And the fact that these officers are simply ignoring the local government or outright refusing to answer questions, not much can be done, as the federal government is the entity behind this program to begin with. With such a respectful and law-abiding police force driving around in armored vehicles and brandishing grenade launchers and other such military equipment in small neighborhoods, I sure feel safer. How about you? This is something that we've seen a lot of different neighborhoods around the United States, and I bring up the grenade launchers because that is a real case of another small town where police officers have grenade launchers and things, really, truly things that have no place on domestic territory unless there's a war going on here. And we see that that's not the case. So, or rather, we see that that may be leading to the case. But the point here is that these neighborhoods or these small police forces have no need for this stuff. And clearly, this is what I see this as an insight into the fact that we spend way too much money on military. And we spent all of these things, that's where all this comes from. It's your hand-me-downs from the military. That's the 1033 program. Down to small police forces, or rather just police forces within the country. So the fact that we have such a gross overuse, so many different things that need to be handed down, shows you how much excess money we are spending simply to keep the military budget as big as it is. And that stands out to me every time I see this. Moving on to the next story coming out of the freethoughtproject.com, the cost of Trump's military parade could eliminate hunger among homeless veterans for weeks. To show how much of an insult this parade is to troops and veterans, according to a recent report, the cost of this parade could directly benefit the 40,000 homeless veterans by feeding them. Instead, it will go to fuel, logistics, drills, and flyovers. Conservative estimates of the cost of the parade are around $10 million, with the higher-end budget coming to about $30 million. Even if we divide the lower-end number by the total number of homeless veterans, that would be around $250 each. As Newsweek reports, Feeding America, a nonprofit organization and the nation's largest hunger relief and food rescue group, found the average cost per meal in the U.S. was $2.94 in 2015, the latest data available. The organization culled data from several organizations and agencies, including the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and found the cost per meal ranged from a low of $2.04 in Maverick County Texas, to a high of $5.61 in Crook County, Oregon. What this means is that the cost of the parade could eliminate hunger among homeless veterans by providing all of them with three meals a day for at least 14 days. And that's using the high estimate of $5.61. If we use the average cost of a meal, homeless veterans could get three squares a day for nearly an entire month. When 307,000 veterans die waiting for care they were promised by this country, which we know due to leaked documents, while the president gloats over military equipment, something is seriously wrong. When the entire country looks the other way while there are over 40,000 veterans living in the streets with no home as the president forces active duty military members to put on a show for him, something is seriously wrong. When Americans remain silent as a veteran kills himself or herself every 65 minutes, every single day, every single month of every single year, as troops and Humvees parade down Pennsylvania Avenue celebrating the war that caused these deaths, it's time to seriously consider a national conversation about what support the troops really means. And no parade will ever do that. This is a conscious choice. Propaganda and nationalism over actually helping people. In particular, the very veterans this parade is supposed to honor. I can't think of anything more insulting. And such an obvious choice should be quite revealing to those who have doubts about the current administration's intentions. We've talked about the idea of feeding the homeless and as far as the money we spend on the military, and there's the money that we spend in general can literally solve some of the world's largest problems. The UN has repeatedly said that
$30 billion a year is all it would take to end world hunger.
Now think about that for a second. I mean, that is absolutely crazy when you consider the fact that we spend billions and billions of dollars on the military, and it would only take a small fraction of that to end world hunger. And yet we don't do that. Moving on to the next story coming out of activistpost.com, surveillance video released of Parkland shooting does not show shooter. This story is a perfect example of what I was referring to in the last show, with the release of a few select tidbits of footage from the shooting that seemed much more like placation and not full disclosure. The author makes a very astute observation and deduction that is very much worth reporting on. And it's exactly this type of addition that is not simply harping on the fact that we don't have the whole story, but using their very own timeline with the new information to reveal verifiable holes in the story to hopefully open some doubtful eyes to the reality of this event. And that is very newsworthy, in my opinion. So more than 27 minutes of surveillance footage has been released from security cameras at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School for the purpose of showing former Deputy Scott Peterson standing outside of the building while students and teachers were murdered inside. According to the timestamp on the video, the footage begins at 2:22 p.m. on February 14th, less than 1 minute before police claim that suspect Nicholas Cruz opened fire inside the freshman building. According to a timeline of the shooting from the Sun Sentinel, Cruz was picked up by an Uber at 2:06 p.m. and dropped off at the school at 2:19 p.m. He then entered the freshman building at 2:21 p.m. The shooting reportedly lasts 7 minutes. The school confirmed that Cruz exited the building at 2:28 p.m. and blended in with other students who were fleeing campus. The timeline gives Cruz just 7 minutes to load his rifle, put on his body armor, shoot 31 people, discard the gun and the body armor, and then exit the building. As that is certainly possible, it is highly, highly unlikely. And then ask yourself why he was not in any of the footage they released. Clearly, they're keeping something to themselves. Moving on to the final story of the day, coming out of the organicprepper.com, modern newspeak. How internet censors are making sure you hear only one side of the story. This is a great example by Daisy Luther of the Organic Prepper, wherein she was censored for simply showing the truth, which is kind of an overarching point for today's show, is rather just the careful cultivation of information to keep you looking at a story and seeing only one side of it. And this is a perfect example. And this is something we've talked about in the past, but it directly relates to how she was specifically censored for simply showing you the truth. And this is back in 2016. She posted an article containing two videos, one of which was quickly removed from YouTube. It was about the threat of civil unrest to the Milwaukee suburbs after a cop killed a black man. The media portrayed the man's sister, as warmly trying to prevent the unrest, urging people not to burn down their own neighborhoods. But they cut her rant right before she urged people to burn down the suburbs instead. She was quoted by Daisy as saying, "Burning down shit ain't going to help nothing. Y'all burning down shit we need in our community. Take that shit to the suburbs. Burn that shit down. We need our shit. We need our weeds. I don't wear it, but we need it. We need our food. We need our gas. Y'all want to hurt somebody, you take that shit further out." Now, really what this shows you is that it's not about the truth to them, first of all. All they did is they cropped the first part. Burning down shit ain't going to help nothing. Y'all burning down shit we need in our community. They cut it right there. And they made it look like, we've talked about this in the past. Many people did covered this story. They literally cut it to where it seemed like she was advocating for the community to stop violence. But in reality, all she was doing was telling them to go hurt other people that wasn't in their neighborhood. And they cut that out. I mean, that is wildly irresponsible. Talk about journalistic integrity. That is fake news. They're manipulating you by showing you one part of the story that progresses what they want you to see. And all Daisy Luther did was post an article with both videos showing you that here's what really happened and here's what they showed you. And that video got taken down and they attacked her after that. She got strikes on her account for what? For simply showing you a video that really took place. Think about that for a second. This wasn't her attacking somebody. They literally called her racist for playing this video when all it was doing was showing you the truth. That has to reveal something to us. And this is really what we need to begin to stand back and see on the larger scale, that every story that we see is exactly like this when coming from mainstream media, cultivated and cut to be exactly what they want it to. For me, this is just one example of what takes place on a daily basis from all mainstream media sources. As I have harped on since the very beginning of this show, the info the masses get from mainstream media is carefully crafted and cultivated to lead you in a very specific direction and keep you doubting the truth that much of the alt media tries to reveal. And today, more than ever, we must begin making choices about where we stand and who we support, because the time will come where you may find yourself on the wrong side of history. For more information about the topics discussed, make sure you check out thelastamericanvagabond.com or any of the important independent sources in the show notes below. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.